Our first case on calendar this morning is 67660, John Fritz and Melissa Fritz versus Washoe County. If the parties are ready to begin, please do so. Mr. Busby?
Good morning. My name is Luke Busby. I'm here on behalf of the appellants, John and Melissa Frentz. If it would please the court, I'd like to proceed with oral arguments on the issue at hand. Thank you, Your Honor. There are three main issues before the court in this proceeding. It involves, of course, a taking as the result of flooding on my client's property that resulted from the development of subdivisions upstream called Lancer Estates and Monte Rosa. Now, during the course of the development of Lancer Estates and Monte Rosa, water that would have gone around my client's property was diverted across it. That water has resulted in damages to my client's property. We have evidence of those damages in the form of an affidavit from my client himself, along with pictures of flooding occurring, and as well as an engineering report saying that there's a reason why the increased flooding has occurred, and it's going to get worse in the future. The question of liability before the court really turns on whether Washoe County was substantially involved in the development of Lancer Estates in Monte Rosa. We believe that the record is quite clear that that their involvement was substantial. And that test comes before the court as a result of the Clark County v. Powers decision, which is, I think, the seminal decision on when taking occurs as a result of flooding in the state of Nevada. And in that case, as the court is well aware, if a county participates in the development of land by its own planning, design, engineering, construction activities, or its adoption of activities of various private developers as part of a master plan or flood control, then it's responsible for the damages. We think the record is quite clear that Washoe County was indeed substantially involved, and there's three main highlights that show that. One is a letter from CFA Engineering in the appendix at volume 1 at page 150. It shows that at one point in the development of Lancer Estates, detention ponds were planned to contain flooding. Those plans were deleted in discussions with Washoe County. If those detention ponds had been built as part of Lancer Estates, perhaps the flooding on my client's property would not have occurred because the water would have been contained on Lancer Estates. Again, another point is the Celebar study at volume 2 at page 229, which clearly identifies my client's property as a problem area. Washoe County knew that flooding would occur if development of Lancer Estates was to proceed. And most importantly, perhaps, is the letter from the Nevada Department of Transportation to a Washoe County official at volume 2, 230, or 325, which directed the developers of Lancer Estates to divert water that would have flowed down Mount Rose Highway across Lancer Estates and across my client's property. Now, whenever a developer builds things on land, they're taking a surface that would have absorbed water, and they make it impervious. And that increases water flow that's going to drain off that property. And because that occurred and that it wasn't mitigated, and because they diverted the water that would have gone around my client's property, a substantial injury is also shown.
Is there any significance that your clients weren't owners of the property at the time it was originally dealt, mapped, and developed when those plans were approved by Washoe County?
Your Honor, the question is on that issue is whether or not I believe they have standing to bring this case. Of course, under Nevada law, if at the time of the taking my clients didn't own the property, they have no right to bring suit. But the question is when the taking occurred. And we believe under the Argyre case that the taking occurred when the physical invasion of my client's property happened. Now, what do we have on the record that shows when when that occurred. Well, the best evidence on that point is the affidavit of Mr. Fritz, which says that he purchased the property in 2001. At that time, there was a small ditch running across it. He says he can walk across it, and year upon year, flooding is getting worse. There's more water flowing through the ditch. It's cutting into the property and causing damages.
Okay. Thank you.
Washoe County brings up the Sisolak decision, which decided that regulatory taking occurs when the government takes the act that constitutes the taking. But this is an entirely different kind of case because there was no regulation directed at my client's property, land use regulation, that constituted a taking. The taking, in this case, was left to physical events. And the Supreme Court addressed that issue pretty straightforwardly in the U.S. v. Dickinson decision, which we cited in our brief, which says that when your property's taken, you don't have to resort to piecemeal litigation premature litigation in order to determine what's taken, that you should avoid procedural rigidities, because in a case like this, it's going to be very difficult to determine exactly when there was enough flood water to constitute a taking. These housing developments started to be built in the mid to late 80s. So, and there's, I think, 15 developments. Each one of those incrementally added to the amount of water that flows through White's Creek number 4 and across my client's property. And it's kind of a when does a heap become a heap issue rather than a couple grains of sand. It's going to be very difficult to determine. But the evidence shows that those physical events that were set in motion did cause the flooding. And what we have is the statement of Mr. Fritz.
Judge Barry granted summary judgment, so you feel there's a genuine issue of material fact as far as the substantial involvement of Washoe County in this? Or what's your main argument here to us why you feel the summary judgment was improper?
Well, summary judgment was improper because Judge Barry determined as a matter of law that a taking didn't occur. And we believe that the evidence, at a minimum, there was a genuine issue of material fact as to whether that was the case. She made that decision on the papers without the benefit of facts presented at a trial, cross-examination, and all of those arguments, et cetera. And taking the facts in the light most favorable to the non-moving party, being my clients, we believe Judge Barry should have determined that there was at least a genuine issue of facts as to whether a taking occurred.
There is, as to the issue that you're talking about right now, I guess the first issue for us to consider is whether there's settled Nevada law on the issue of taking in this particular case, or do we need to look at the California jurisprudence as to the taking, or possibly Texas. And when you get into this type of situation, the question is whether or not there was a substantial involvement, or whether or not in this case, since the action is not, depending on how you see it, that substantial involvement, in some cases, the mere approval is not sufficient. You have to have an action by the government actor. How do you respond?
Your Honor, it's our position that there is sufficient Nevada law to come to the conclusion that a taking did occur based on the Clark County v. Powers case and the Buzz Stoop case. But we also think that even if you look at the law from other jurisdictions, that according to that law, a taking occurred here as well.
Aren't those cases slightly different in terms of what we have here, we seem to have, is merely an approval. And the question then arises within that question is whether or not the drainage studies or plans that were put in place were defective by the private developers.
Indeed, Your Honor. And we do have approval of the plans, but we also have the dedication of the property that conveys the water onto my client's land from the developer to Washoe County. And under the Yox v. Whittier case discussed in the briefs, it's quite clear that a private developer, the county isn't responsible for what a private developer does unless that property is dedicated for public use, which in this case it was.
And as I said, that's one viewpoint. The other viewpoint is that the dedication from the private developer, the county is still not responsible. That's the Texas position. It's just an absolute position. and you have two others that are a little softer in California, which would hold if they're substantial.
Your Honor, I think we meet all of the elements here that under all of the law that we cite in the brief, we can show they approved the plans, they accepted dedication of the infrastructure, and not only that, they were involved. The NDOT's letter indicates quite clearly that the developer diverted the water from Mount Rose Highway across Lancer Estates at the direction of the Department of Transportation and Washoe County. Therefore, it's not just a matter of approving plans or accepting dedication. They did more than that. And just as a matter of a big picture issue here is when a modern housing developer builds a development, every step in that path is controlled by the local government. Washoe County was intimately involved in everything that happened here. To say that all they did was approve the plans, I think, minimizes that involvement, and it's also contradicted by the record. We have documents showing that they were telling the developers what to do. And the whole point of that is that the developer builds the drainage, the streets, all of the infrastructure, and the whole point is to dedicate that stuff to the county, and it becomes part of...
Should that dedication, though, relieve the original developer of their liability for that development?
Yes, Your Honor, in theory it could, but I don't think that liability would exclude liability for inverse condemnation to the local government because it's the act of the government in participating in the development, approving plans, accepting dedication, telling the developer what to do that constitutes a government action that triggers liability for a taking.
We just seesaw development because the state or the local government says, I don't want to be liable, so I'm not going to approve anything?
Oh, Your Honor, certainly a valid concern, opening the floodgates of litigation, as the point that was raised by Washoe County. But if a developer follows the rules that exist today in developing housing development, a situation like this would never occur. There's no way that Washoe County would approve a development and have a letter from an engineering company, as we have in the CFA letter, that says, oh, no, don't build detention ponds. Just dump all of the water from the subdivision onto the neighboring property. Rules exist today that protect neighboring properties from incurring the full cost of development, as explained at length in the Clark County v. Powers decision. And so that's not going to occur. The Clark County Powers decision came out in 1980. This development occurred, the planning for it and everything occurred not that much longer after. If you look at how Monte Rosa was developed, they do have detention ponds. But the problem is the drainage from Monte Rosa connects into the drainage of Lancer Estates. Therefore, water that would have gone around my client's property down Mount Rose Highway is now channeled through Lancer Estates and across my client's property. That's why Monte Rosa is relevant in this case.
You have 2 minutes and 18 seconds left. Do you want to reserve that for rebuttal?
I would, Your Honor. Thank you.
Mr. Richenberg? Reichenberg? Excuse me. Mr. Hollinsworth, I'm sorry.
May it please the court, my name is Stephen Hollinsworth. I represent respondent in Washoe County. The district court got this exactly right, and its summary judgment should be affirmed. Nothing directly connects Washoe County to any flooding that has taken place on the Fritz's property. For involvement that would give rise to inverse condemnation, it has to be substantial involvement.
So are you conceding that they're standing, that they have standing?
I'm not conceding that they have standing, Your Honor.
So what you're saying is that there's still an issue of standing, but if we do find standing, that there's summary judgment was appropriate because there was no taking?
Yes, Your Honor. The substantial involvement required there, in the case law has shown, whether it's in California, whether it's in Nevada, there is significant participation in planning, approving, constructing, or operating the public improvement or the public project. There's simply nothing like that here. You have approval of subdivision maps and accepting dedications of roads and drainage systems. To have the authority from California, for example, it corresponds to what we had in the Clark County versus Powers case, where the mere approval of subdivision maps was not sufficient. even the cases such as the Yox case and the Olery case that seem to suggest that maybe accepting dedication was sufficient were subsequently clarified by the Gutierrez case in 2011. That case said that it had to be not just the mere ownership that you have through accepting a dedication, but it was the dominion and control. And there's simply nothing like that here. The case out of Michigan, the Froling case, looked at the form of the action, the deliberateness, and the intensity of it. There's none of that here. It's approving a subdivision map, and it's accepting dedication of road systems. The evidence that they point to, there's the Sela Bar study from 1994. It's a study that shows that it's a floodplain. The letter that they point to from the engineer, a private engineering firm, decided that in the course of developing this property, tentative maps have been issued. They're in the process of building now, and they decided not to use a detention pond. The letter doesn't show that they were forced not to use a detention pond by the county. It merely shows that at some point they decided against it. There's nothing indicating that the county took any affirmative action towards the Fritz's property, no matter how they want to characterize these documents. In the Clark County versus Powers case, they acknowledge it is the seminal case on this, and we agree. And the inverse condemnation liability in that case was based on the county raising Towpath Street 4 feet, raising land that was near Towpath Street, entering plaintiff's property without permission, and building a concrete berm on that property. There's nothing like that here. There's the approval of subdivision maps and accepting dedications. There was no affirmative act by the county directed at the plaintiffs. There's also the requirement that the injury be permanent and substantial. You see this in the Buzz Stew case, or I'm sorry, the ASAP storage case, where there had to be a permanent impairment of property, an actual taking of it. There is simply nothing like that here. Mr. Fritz, in his own deposition testimony, said he was able to clean up any damage from the water, said there was no damage to the walls of the garage. There was maybe $3,000 to $4,000 worth of damage to personal property. And he said in his own observation.
Counsel, if it was your property, would you want to clean it up every time it rained?
Your Honor, in most cases, the water would abate, I believe, and there's no indication that this is a permanent flooding problem.
Is it not a taking during that period of time, though?
Under our case law, I would say no, Your Honor, not under Nevada's case law. Those types of temporary damage that can occur from flooding, and this was the issue in Buzz Stew, was temporary pooling.
Is that temporary taking of an airplane going through the sky?
I'm sorry, could you restate the question?
Is that any different than an airplane going through the sky repeatedly?
If you're referring to the Sisolak case, I would say it is different because there's always the threat that this plane's now going to come through and crash into this building that you built.
Well, we weren't talking about crashing. We were just talking about invasion.
But he's permanently prevented from using that property. Mr. Fritz has testified he's not impaired from using his property here. He's been leasing it since at least 2002. $800 to $1,300 a month. Nothing has kept him from using this property.
For the highest and best use?
That aspect of this case has not been looked into.
Well, then was summary judgment then appropriate?
No, Your Honor. I would say it was not appropriate because their involvement was not substantial. And I think it's clear based on his own testimony that injury wasn't substantial. There's simply been no demonstration of that permanent type of taking.
Counsel outlined that at the suggestion of the county that they changed their diversion plan of the water from going on the, quote, Mount Rose side to the other side. Is that not substantial involvement?
I'm not quite sure what he was referring to in that statement. If it was based on the letter between the state and the letter from the state to the county, that was the state asking the county to there had been an agreement that there would be a concrete berm. There would not be a concrete berm that would block water. The state, talking to the private developer, was trying to get the developer to take the concrete berm down. And apparently the developer was not cooperating, so the state asked the county to get involved. There's nothing that shows that the county dictated for the developer to do. All it shows in the subsequent Lancer 10 hydrology report is it appears that they said we didn't have to take it down because it did not exceed the 10 cubic feet per it did not exceed the limit that the state was comfortable with allowing the water. So it looks like the concrete berm remained, as far as I can tell.
Mr. Hollinsworth, you do not think there's an analogy between this case and the ASAP storage case, which you mentioned previously there. Tell me how much that the holding in that case, why it supports your position in this case.
It supports our position because they were actually blocked from their property for two entire days, and that type of impairment was not significant enough. There was even minor property damage, minor personal property damage to the businesses.
But that was the one where there were barricades and sparks because of the around the...
Yes, Your Honor. Yeah. And that was not determined substantial enough. The types of injuries here are recoverable through nuisance and negligence and trespass. In fact, although counsel would say, well, no, accepting dedications now relieves the private developers of liability, they initially sued the private developers and the engineers after these dedications were accepted. But the statute of limitations had run. And I think that gets at the heart of what this case is really about. They are trying to recover negligence, nuisance, and trespass-type damages through claims that are now barred. And so the only claim with a long enough limitation period was an inverse condemnation claim against the county. But negligence is not inverse condemnation. Their reference to, you know, flood studies from the 90s, those are all suggesting that it wasn't reasonable for the county to approve these plans. Those are negligence types allegations. That's not inverse condemnation.
So you don't think this, as Justice Douglas was drawing that analogy with the Sisolak case, was the airplanes flying over the area close to the Clark McCarran Airport. This flooding is not analogous to that. Where they had those intermittent flights going over there, intermittent flooding here wouldn't be the same thing.
No, Your Honor. And their reference to the Dickinson case is also an entirely different circumstance. The federal government dammed a river and then gradually raised the water level and gradually started taking that people's property as it eroded and flooded. There's no involvement like that here by the county. And by their own argument, they are not even clear when would the county then in that case implement an inverse condemnation action or a taking action back in the 80s when Lancaster States was first built. Well, the Fritzes didn't own the property then. Even if you go into the 90s, the Fritzes didn't own the property then. At what point would the county, based merely on approving subdivision maps and accepting dedications, begin to look and say, oh, we need to take this property?
Second, approval of the subdivision that you're glancing over, wasn't that approved after their ownership began?
Two subdivision maps were approved following their purchase of the property, but only two of the 15. And again, I mean, that might go to their standing argument, but it doesn't show substantial involvement. And I think the power space, again, is helpful here. The inverse, and it was particularly with respect to the type of damage, the plaintiffs were awarded inverse condemnation only for the land that lost all practical use, either because of the flooding or because of the concrete berm the county built.
Isn't that something that is not suitable for summary judgment? Isn't that something that goes to the jury to make that determination as to value?
Perhaps, Your Honor, but it doesn't. But we would argue, Your Honor, that what they presented by their own testimony shows that there's not significant damage under the case law, and we show that there is not substantial involvement. Those are significant grounds, substantial enough grounds for summary judgment. There's no genuine issue of fact under Nevada case law or other states' case law that the involvement by the county was not significant enough to constitute a taking. If that is sufficient for a taking, it makes the county the insurer of all development, guaranteeing the reasonableness and the quality of that development. As the justices kind of hinted at earlier, that would have a disastrous effect on development. To make the county the insurer, under their, you know, again, if a party's allowed to come in 20 years later in some instances and say, well, flooding has incurred on our land now, I mean, the county for decades into the future has hanging over its head the possibility of having to pay for private development that it approved decades earlier. It can't be responsible to forecast that type of stuff.
The counties have looked to forecast that by looking at 100-year flood levels and such when they make those determinations in the zoning and planning departments and approval of drainage studies. So that's not out of the realm of possibility. But in this particular case, as you have pointed out, there were 13 prior approvals, and then these final two that seem to push it over the edge. That's a consideration we have.
Well, there's... No, I'm sorry.
So... The question, it's a fundamental, and you're arguing on behalf of the county, and that is, who should be responsible for the damages on the private property the county, as you are articulating, did not do something, as you said, substantial involvement, or the initial developers of this. That seems to be what the issue is today.
Yes, Your Honor, and I think initially appellants, the Fritzes, agreed that it was the developers. Those are the people, and the engineers, those are the people they sued to get their damages for the type of injury they suffered. When those were time barred, they went to an inverse condemnation action against the county. This is their third amended complaint. It's taken them four tries to come up with this theory of liability. And I think what is at the heart of this is they moved to a problem area. As they pointed to, a study from 94 identified this as the floodplain. So they moved to, they purchased land on the side of a mountain, downhill from development, and now when it floods, they want to get paid for it. But they moved to the problem area, and they're experiencing the problem.
But as you highlight that, their position is that the drainage through that area was reasonable up until the last approval. And they're saying it's different from what it was previously. It's extreme now.
They're saying it's expanded, but there's no indication that it's abnormally expanded. They have not tied anything to the final two subdivision approvals. They're simply saying it's expanded over time. It's a creek. Water erodes. There's no indication that this expansion is an abnormal expansion. And yes, certainly those get into questions of fact, but we don't even have to get that far because there was no substantial involvement in anything. And Your Honors, they're trying to have it both ways. On the one hand, they want to argue that the taking, they did all this stuff back in the 80s and 90s that was a taking. But then they want to say, don't look at all that. Look at all the water that runs on our property now. But they can't have it both ways. And the county cannot be responsible for, every time they approve a subdivision map, to ensure that development. Again, that would have disastrous effects on the development in Nevada. There would be a reluctance even to participate. They would face, if the county is withholding approvals of maps and not letting developers develop their land, they now face potential taking claims from the developers for not being allowed to use their land. And ultimately, this all falls on the taxpayers, where the county gets its money from. I think sound public policy warrants against the finding that the very minimal involvement here, merely approving subdivision maps and accepting roads, is substantial enough involvement for a taking. It was no affirmative act directed at the property. Your Honors, the law requires, I think, public policy demands for all the reasons that I've stated, that the district court's summary judgment be affirmed. Thank you.
Thank you.
If I may, Your Honor, very briefly, I'd like to address a few points that were made during the reply argument. The county is never going to be responsible for privately owned development on private land. There's no case law that supports that position. We're bringing a case against the county because of its substantial involvement, and it's now ownership of the development within Lancer Estates. That ownership, that property that it owns, is the stuff that's conveying the water across my client's property. The Clark County case is an extreme case. It was a good decision to make law in that case because it was very clear that a taking occurred. The county entered plaintiff's property in that case and actually did construction. That was they never said in the Clark County case that actual entry by the county was required, just that substantial involvement was required, and we think we've shown that here. In the Buzz Stew case, it was shown that there was no real permanent physical invasion. We have a report from an engineer indicating that when the 100-year flood occurs on my client's property through White's Creek number 4, that the results are going to be disastrous. Accepting that proposition is true, summary judgment in this matter should not have been granted by Judge Barry. My client should not have to wait for a flood to come to wash their house down White's Creek number 4 in order to be able to bring a takings case.
What about the ASAP storage case that Mr. Hollingsworth mentioned? What do you think about that?
Well, the record here, including the study from Mr. Stoner, shows that the damages are much more substantial. We're not dealing with some kind of minimal case here. Mr. Stoner very clearly points out that this is a big problem, and it's going to cause, when the 100-year flood occurs, he uses the word disastrous, which is a pretty extreme word for an engineer to use, in my humble opinion. Therefore, it's clearly distinguishable based on the facts. And That's also an issue that shouldn't have been discussed on summary judgment. If you had a complete trial record, something from the county, an expert on their side, saying what Mr. Stoner said is not true, then you'd have a reasonable basis to choose one side or the other. But at this stage in the proceedings, we don't think that's proper. In terms of how many subdivisions have been approved, two out of the 11 Lancer Estate subdivisions have been completed. Monte Rosa is still being constructed, and water from Monte Rosa is still being channeled across my client's property. The county is still actively participating in that development. Our original complaint alleged an inverse condemnation action against Washoe County. It's not like we just brought this up for the first time in our third amended complaint. There were extremely complex issues of law at issue. Judge Barry ruled that some of the Prince's claims against the private developers were time barred. Those did not affect the inverse condemnation claim, which was an original part of this proceeding. It's not like we just made this up after we lost on the motion to dismiss. And finally, this isn't just a negligence issue. This is Washoe County, through its own acts and by adopting the actions of private developers, using my client's property as a floodway to accommodate the development upstream. Fundamentally, that's not a negligence issue, Your Honor. They weren't negligent. They knew exactly what they were doing. The record is very clear on that point. Detention ponds were planned for Lancer Estates and then later avoided. Water was diverted from Mount Rose Highway that would have gone around my client's property. They knew exactly what they were doing. With that, I'd be glad to answer any questions.
No additional questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much,
Mr. Fesby. Mr. Hollingsworth, we thank you for your arguments this day, clarifying issues that stand before the court. This matter will stand submitted at this time.